Persigo Press presents the Henry Rios Mysteries Podcast. Hello, this is Michael Nava, author of a series of crime novels featuring Henry Rios, a gay Mexican-American criminal defense lawyer, and the producer of this podcast. Today we present Lay Your Sleeping Head, the first novel in the series. Lay Your Sleeping Head opens in the summer of 1982 in the fictional town of Linden, California, 30 miles south of San Francisco. Linden is the home of the prestigious university of the same name, founded in the 19th century by railroad tycoon Grover Linden. Henry Rios is a public defender, born and raised in a small town in California's Central Valley, and from a working-class Mexican-American family. He is a graduate of Linden University and its top-ranked law school. In 1982, there is no internet. People smoke in bars and on airplanes. Most gay men are closeted, and no one has heard of AIDS. It's an America where 83% of the people identify as white, 85% as Christian, and 83% say that homosexuality is morally wrong. Ronald Wilson Reagan, who once declared that trees cause more pollution than automobiles, is the president of the United States. In the last episode, Rios resigned from the public defender's office after his encounter with a young man named Hugh Paris at the jail led him to question the value of his work. In this episode, Hugh turns up at Rios's apartment in the middle of the night with an improbable tale of long-ago murders in his wealthy family. Although Rios is skeptical, the two men end up in bed, where they discover an emotional bond deeper than mere sexual attraction.
Hugh?
Don't turn on any lights.
It's 3 in the morning. What are you doing here?
I think I'm being followed.
Followed by who?
Please, can I come in?
Yeah, of course. I'm just going to turn on the desk lamp, okay?
Okay.
Come over here. Let me see your eyes.
I'm not high, if that's what you're thinking. I could use a drink, though.
I keep the booze in the kitchen. Make yourself at home. Here you go.
Cheers.
What brings you here tonight?
You wrote your number and address on your card, remember? You told me I could call you for anything I needed.
So, what do you need?
The last time I saw you, you were wearing a shirt.
You're lucky I remembered to pull on some pants before I answered the door.
I'm not complaining, but when I pictured you shirtless, I imagined a hairy chest.
It's the Indian blood. You spend a lot of time imagining me without a shirt on?
Among other things. You ever think about me?
Only when I'm awake. He took our glasses and set them on the coffee table, then stepped into my arms, tipped his face upwards, and we kissed. His tongue slid lazily into my mouth, and I savored the taste and the warmth of his hard little body against mine. His fingers worked the buttons of my 501s, and he tugged my pants down on my thighs. With the last lewd kiss, he dropped to his knees. Just as he was about to take me in his mouth, I reached down, hooked my arms around his armpits, and lifted him up to his feet.
What are you doing?
Trying to pull my pants up over my hard-on.
You want me to stop?
Sit down.
My blowjobs are legendary.
No doubt. I gave you my card weeks ago. If all you wanted was sex, you could have called me anytime. I would have come running. Instead, you show up at my apartment in the dead of the night telling me you're being followed. I believe you when you say you're not high. So what is it?
I'm sorry I didn't call. I wanted to. I felt, you know, like we connected.
I tried to find you, but you walked out of that jail and you disappeared.
I don't have anything in my name, not my house or phone or car. Precautions.
Against what?
I told you I came back from New York to deal with some family things.
Yeah, I remember.
They involve people who could hurt me, so I keep my head down. I got a scare tonight, and I needed to find a safe place. I thought of you.
You need to fill in a few more blanks for me.
I don't want to drag you into my drama.
You did that when you knocked at my door. So?
I come from money.
I guess that from the watch you're wearing.
Good eye. Vintage Rolex. Worth about $50,000, I guess. It was my dad's. It's the only thing I have left of his. I managed to hang on to it through everything.
Everything meaning becoming a junkie.
Everything, including becoming a junkie. But like I told you at the jail, I'm clean now.
Okay, go on.
My family has old and famous money. It comes from my grandmother's side, my dad's mom. But grandfather controls it through a family trust. I'm a beneficiary. When I was out there using, all I cared about was that the money kept flowing. But he cut me off. I had to find other ways to take care of myself. But you know about that. After I got clean, I began to look into the trust to get back what was mine. I discovered some things about how my grandfather got control of the money. Criminal things.
Like what? Diverting funds? Embezzlement?
Murder.
What?
He had people killed, Henry. That's how he got control of the money.
Who do you think he killed?
Had killed. My grandmother and my uncle, his son.
Okay. Why them?
Like I told you, it was her money. My grandfather married into it. She was going to divorce him. My uncle was helping her. If she had divorced him, he would have gotten nothing, so he had them killed.
What you're telling me is that while you were nosing around in the family trust, you discovered your grandfather is a murderer? Is he the guy that you're hiding from? The one that you think is following you?
Having me followed.
What do you think he'll do to you?
Try to scare me off? And if that doesn't work, he'll have me killed too.
Your grandfather wants to murder you? Really?
You think I'm crazy, don't you?
Put yourself in my place. In the middle of the night, a guy you met once in a jail who admits to being a drug addict shows up at your house and tells you he's being stalked by his grandfather, who's some kind of serial killer. What do you think?
See, that's why I didn't say anything to you at the jail.
Who got you out of the jail, by the way?
Uncle John. My grandmother's brother. He has some influence down here.
I'll say. The DA dropped all the charges. The cops destroyed the record of your arrest. Does Uncle John know about your allegations against your grandfather?
I told him. He thinks I'm angry about how the old man treated me.
So he doesn't believe you either.
I have evidence.
There's no statute of limitations on murder. If you have proved your grandfather killed someone, take it to the cops. If he's cheating you out of money that belongs to you, I can refer you to a really good civil lawyer.
Take it to the cops? Sue him? You have no idea who he is. He owns this town.
Now you're starting to sound a little crazy.
To hell with you. I'll be going now.
No, wait, Hugh, hold on. This is what I think. You come from money, but you ended up on the streets shooting junk. While you were out there, your grandfather cut you off. Maybe he was practicing tough love, or maybe he's an asshole. I don't know. What I do know is that addiction does things to your head. You might be clean now, but there are residual effects. Now, I'd be very careful about accusing people of murder until you're sure you've shaken your addiction.
So I'm not crazy. I'm detoxing.
I'm just trying to make sense of what you've told me without having to write you off as a complete lunatic because...
Because what?
Because I don't want to have to ask you to leave.
Is that lawyer talk for you want me to stay?
Yes. I want you to stay. I haven't stopped thinking about you since we met.
If I'm so crazy, how do you know I wouldn't knife you in your sleep?
Who said anything about sleeping?
Use me, baby. Do whatever you want. Hurt me.
What, you want me to hurt you?
That's usually what the guys who paid me wanted. I got used to it. I guess I even liked it.
I'm not one of your Johns. And you've been hurt enough. We both have.
You seem so self-confident, I wouldn't have guessed that you're lonely too.
Now you know.
Good morning, sleepyhead. I put on some coffee.
Oh, you're still here. I was afraid you'd left.
Scoot over.
That tattoo on your chest looks old. What is it, a peach?
Yeah. I got it in Amsterdam when I was 9. My dad's idea.
What kind of father makes his 9-year-old get a tattoo?
My dad was pretty sick by then.
What was wrong with him?
I don't know exactly, but I would have done anything for him. Anyway, he got one too, and he went first, so I wasn't scared when it was my turn.
What were you doing in Amsterdam?
It was the 60s, and my parents, I guess you'd call them hippies. We lived in communes, ashrams, and one winter in a castle in Scotland. God, that place was freezing cold.
Who took care of you?
My dad, when he could. My mom, when she was sober. Sometimes I had a nanny, but I spent a lot of time on my own.
Are those Chinese characters beneath that tattoo?
Yes. I had no idea what they meant until this one time in New York. I was with this John from Hong Kong, and I asked him. He said it says, "Heaven protects the innocent."
Protects them against what?
You'd have to ask my dad, and he's dead.
I'm sorry.
He died a long time ago. You ask a lot of questions.
That's what lawyers do.
I didn't get back into bed to be interrogated.
Hey, that tickles.
How about this? Does this tickle? When did you know you were gay?
Around 12, when I hit puberty. You?
I didn't make it to 12.
What do you mean?
I was raped when I was 10.
What? Oh, that's terrible. Who?
I'm not ready to talk to you about it.
Will you tell me someday?
I don't know.
Come over here.
You're sweet, Henry.
You said that at the jail, too. But I'm not, you know?
Yes, you are. You look tough and you talk tough, but you're a soft touch. You learn these things when you're on the street. Who you can trust, who you can't.
It's hard to imagine you on the street.
I clean up pretty well, but don't be fooled. I'm a junkie, remember, and I supported my habit on my back. Doesn't matter where you started out, that life, it changes you.
How did it start? Using, I mean.
I needed to get well.
What does that mean?
That's what we say when we need a fix. I need to get well. Like, life is the disease and junk is the cure. For a long time, it was.
Then why get clean?
The cure became worse than the disease. And then the only cure was dying, and I guess I wasn't ready to die. It's late. Shouldn't you be getting ready for work?
I quit.
What? Why?
I stopped believing what I was doing made enough of a difference to keep doing it.
What will you do now?
I don't know. Get to know you better.
You know, I'm not really like you, Henry.
What is that supposed to mean?
Like I said, I clean up well, but I'm not another gay guy waiting for his prince to come. All I ever waited for was the next fix. Junk took away my pain, but it turned me into a liar and a thief and a whore. Don't trust me.
At the jail, you said you were trying to change your life.
I am, but old habits die hard. I don't want to hurt you.
Let me worry about that.
For someone who makes his living defending criminals, you're kind of innocent.
Why? Because I believe you when you say you want to be a better person? I'm not naive. I know when someone is shining me on, and I know when he's being sincere.
How can you know that about me when I'm not even sure myself?
I just do.
I have to go now.
Wait, is it something I said?
I have a meeting in the city this afternoon with someone who doesn't like to be kept waiting.
Call me later.
Thank you, Henry. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Lay Your Sleeping Head, a Henry Rios mystery. If you enjoyed this podcast, please spread the word on social media. We depend upon your support to keep this series going. For updates and behind-the-scenes extras, visit us at our Facebook page, The Henry Rios Mysteries, or at michaelnavawriter.com under the podcast tab. We'd also love to hear from you. Message us on Facebook or email us at persigopress@gmail.com. That's persigopress@gmail.com. This is an abridged version of the novel, Lay Your Sleeping Head. You can buy the complete novel at Amazon. For this episode, our cast was Armando Rey as Henry Rios and Cameron Labrie as Hugh Paris. Our director is Russell Kaltschmidt. Our sound engineer is Dave Peck. Music and sound effects were composed by Josh DeRosa. This episode was written and produced by Michael Nava.